Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. One of the most important concepts in Rainer Maria Rilke's Letters to a Young Poet is what we translate in English typically as solitude. In German, it's Einsamkeit. And another translation for it that you'll see sometimes used in his poetry is loneliness, because Einsam means being on one's own. Einsamkeit is the state of being on one's own. And for Rilke, this is not just something that you could say predicate of a person who happens accidentally to be on his or her own. Instead, it's something that belongs to a person that, in some respect, makes them the person who they are, what they do with their solitude. And he considers it to be an essential part of the human condition, but it's not necessarily a feature of that condition that everybody manages well or understands or reacts to in the right ways. And every individual person, every human being is not only capable of solitude, of having some sort of interiority, an inner life, however you want to put it, something that is their own, that makes them the individual who they are apart from, although it could still be engaged with other individuals. Rilke goes beyond that. He actually suggests that it is absolutely central to the human condition. So in letter 8, he says, "To speak of solitude again, it becomes clearer and clearer that fundamentally this is nothing that one can choose or refrain from. We are solitary. This is what we are. We are einsam. We are on our own to some degree. We can delude ourselves about this. That's a possibility. That's a choice. And act as if this were not true. That is all. But how much better it is to recognize that we are alone. Yes, even to begin from this realization," he says. And if we do begin from this realization, it's going to help us over time, not immediately. He talks about being dizzy when thinking about this, but it will help us over time to develop into a state where we can make use of that solitude. In an earlier letter, number 5, when he is writing to this young man, he suggests to us that solitude is not something that we can actually avoid, in part because he says, this is letter 6, rather. He says, "When you notice that your solitude is vast, you should be happy. For what would a solitude be that was not vast? There is only one solitude, and it is vast, heavy, difficult to bear." Now, what he's suggesting there is that we're all sharing to some degree, not just within this condition that makes us, each one of us, isolated and alone by ourselves, but that we're all in some respect together in this aloneness as well, that the solitude that I can explore and retreat into or avoid and try to escape from in me is in some respect the same solitude that you are in, or that Rainer Maria Rilke or his interlocutor is in. So he has a very strong, you could say, metaphysical conception of this as being part of the human condition. He also talks about it in relation to childhood at several points. That's not to say that solitude only stems from or develops within childhood, but childhood is one period where we can go back to and remember and realize that we encountered it and that we lived within it. And if you think about your own childhood, however, you know, great or traumatic it was, there, you're going to find something similar to what he's talking about. He suggests in his very first letter that his interlocutor, this guy Kappas, should withdraw into his own solitude. He says, try to raise up the sunken feelings of this enormous past, your childhood. Your personality will grow stronger. Your solitude will expand and become a place where you can live in the twilight, where the noise of other people passes by far in the distance. And that is, you know, coming about because of this movement back into childhood. He also talks about a child's attitude towards adults. And he says, to be solitary, this is in letter 6, as you were when you were a child, when the grown-ups walked around involved with matters that seemed large and important because they looked so busy and you didn't understand a thing of what they were doing. When you realize their activities are shabby, their vocations are petrified and no longer connected with life, why not continue to look on it as a child would, as if you were looking at something unfamiliar out of the depths of your own world, from the vastness of your own solitude? And so within childhood, we already have an encounter with this. Now, that doesn't mean that we fully cognize it or understand its value or even develop our solitude entirely. It depends on our stages of life, and adulthood is going to be important, but childhood is something we can go back to. Solitude should also be understood in terms of growth and distance. And there's a twofold aspect to this. Rilke talks about solitude itself as something like interior space, that it can be smaller or it can be larger or vaster, wider. He also talks about the solitude of external spaces. For example, when he is writing to Kappas from Russia, for example, when he's talking to Kappas about, Kappas is a military officer, about where he's stationed out in, as we would say, the boonies or the sticks, in the midst of nature, particularly when it's, you know, wintertime and the snow is falling and there's nobody else around. There's this vast external landscape, and we can have something like that within ourselves, this vast internal place. He talks about our ability to grow solitude, and he suggests, as I'm going to talk about in a moment, that we might do that when things are, in fact, most difficult for us, when the solitude itself is hard to bear. That's when we have the opportunity to grow that solitude. But I mentioned this is a twofold thing about growth and distance. It's not as if we're just sort of opening up this space within ourselves, within whatever you want to conceive of it, our heart, our mind, our narrative. We are ourself growing within that solitude as well. So if we have too small of a space of solitude, not a lot of room for us to grow. We need to develop enough space that we can move around within it and thereby ourselves grow and deepen and even connect ourselves back out to things, you might say, outside of the bounds of our own little solitude to that of the rest of the world and to others. He stresses that solitude itself is very difficult to bear, and it's quite understandable. We don't, you know, if you want to translate solitude, Einsamkeit is loneliness, there is a lonely aspect to it. So he cautions Kappas. He says, in the midst of the holiday, you're bearing your solitude more heavily than usual, more with more difficulty, right? And he says, when you notice it is vast, you should be happy. And this is where we had this previous quote, what would a solitude be that was not vast? And he says, it is vast, heavy, difficult to bear. And almost everyone has hours where he would gladly exchange that solitude for any kind of sociability, however trivial or cheap, for the tiniest outward agreement with the first person who comes along, the most unworthy. But perhaps these are the very hours during which solitude grows. Its growing is as painful, he says, as the growing of boys, and as sad as the beginning of spring. But this must not confuse you. What is necessary, after all, is only this solitude, vast inner solitude, to walk inside yourself and meet no one for hours. That is what you must be able to attain. And that's something that can be quite difficult for many of us at you know, many points in our life. He also writes a little bit later, this is in letter 7, don't let yourself be confused in your solitude by the fact that there is something in you that wants to move out of it. He suggests that if you use this desire prudently, you will in fact be able to expand that solitude as well. But there's this drive to get away from solitude, to lose ourselves in something where we can have some easy agreement, some superficiality, some convention with another person. He also talks about, in some very important ways, the relationship between solitude and love. And I think this is a particularly important thing to keep in mind, because you might think about solitude as something that you have just by yourself. You could say, well, you know, there is this common human condition of solitude, but we're all these isolated monads or individuals, atomized, to use a phrase that sociologists particularly like, and none of us have anything really in common. None of us can see into each other. We're all sort of on our own. You come into this world alone, you die alone, you live alone, right? Well, that's not the way Rilke views solitude. When solitude is used correctly, in order for us to grow, when we expand it, when we are patient with it, it creates the possibility for us to open up to another person and also to see them as a person who has their own solitude in which they have to grow. We don't have to be on top of them all the time. We don't have to be identical with them. We don't have to share everything with them. It's okay if they go off and read their book or have their hobby and do their thing over here and don't tell you about it until they choose to, because that's what it means to have actual human beings living with each other. It's not sharing everything all the time, but it's not being totally closed off with each other either. And in letter 7, this is where he talks about this the most. And he says some very important things here. He tells us that you know, solitude is difficult. And he tells us that love itself ties in with solitude. He says that learning time is always a long, secluded time. Therefore, loving for a long time ahead and far on into life is what? Solitude, a heightened and deepened kind of aloneness for the person who loves. When you love somebody else, you really love them, you are, in some respect, on your own. Loving doesn't mean pushing a button and getting the same response from them. And he goes on and he says that, you know, it's a high inducement for the individual to ripen, to become something in himself, to become world, to become, notice what he says here, world in himself for the sake of another person. When you love somebody else, you become, if you do this, more, so that you have more to offer them. And you have to do that by developing this solitude within yourself. You know, we often have this trivial thing, you have to love yourself before you can love anybody else. This would be really loving yourself, developing what is good for you, this solitude, so that you actually have that to share with another person, so that when they withdraw and you know, need some time to come back, you're not chasing them all the time and pressuring them, so that you're not saying dumb stuff just to fill up the air with a lot of nonsense, so that you know there's no quiet spaces or anything like that. You have to grow in order to be capable of love. And he talks about temptations, particularly for those who, he says, are young, but this would apply to many older people who never developed that solitude either, who live proverbial lives of quiet desperation. They can't be on their own, so they can't really be with another person because they think that they're going to fuse with them and everything is going to go great from that point on. And Rilke talks about them as throwing away their solitude in doing that, which is a big problem. It comes back damaged, unusable. He also has this very wonderful phrase that has been often discussed, where he says that what love would in fact really be is, in the highest degree, is this: two solitudes protect and border and greet each other. And I think that it's important. He doesn't just say two solitudes protect each other, two solitudes greet each other, two solitudes border each other. Those three things, those three elements all need to be there because each of them serves an important purpose. They protect each other. They take care of each other, including protecting them, the other from themselves, from imposing too much or demanding too much of the other. They border the other. They don't fuse with the other. They don't become one single being. They are two different people, but they border each other in a way that other people don't. And they greet each other. They have something to say. They have a positive relation towards each other. Rilke is talking about romantic love in this case, but I don't see any reason why that couldn't apply just as much to, say, friendship or other types of relationships, perhaps interfamilial relationships as well. The last thing that I want to stress here is that Rilke also views the solitary person as a sort of path maker. They are able to do things that he thinks other human beings will eventually be capable of if humanity does continue to develop. But for the moment, this is something that is going to be restricted to the solitary person. He says, he's talking about bodily delight, for example, and he says people have kind of screwed this up, even with eating. And then he says the individual can make these deep, simple needs of life clear for himself and live them clearly. Not the individual who is dependent, not the individual who's taking their cues from, say, the culinary industry or, you know, the food channel or, you know, popular trends about food or anything like that, but the person who's actually using their solitude as a basis for having their own experiences and thinking about things. He says, not the individual who is dependent, but the solitary person. The solitary person has a scope of freedom that other people do not, and they can do things that other people can't at this time. A little bit later, he says, everything that may someday be possible for many people, the solitary person can now already prepare and build with their own hands, which make fewer mistakes. Therefore, love your solitude and try to sing out with the pain that it causes you, because that solitude provides you with this freedom that other people don't yet enjoy, a freedom which allows you to grasp things and take on tasks that they're not up to. So, solitude runs throughout all of these letters. It's absolutely central to Rilke's vision of what it means to be a human being, what it means to develop, and what it means to live the good life, particularly as an artist. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/Sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.